will be appreciative. Then there was one Indian print, very famous Indian print, of Krishna playing the flute, standing by the moonlight by the Jamuna River. And Prabhupada quoted a verse from a play, a drama, by one of our predecessor acharyas, that is Srila Rupa Goswami, that one gopi, beloved of Krishna, is telling her friend, because all the gopis are married to other coward men, not really, because they're all the power, the transcendental power of Krishna. Srimati Radhika, the chief gopi, is Krishna's complete swarup shakti, or internal pleasure potency. She's the all-accommodating, inconceivable potency, achintya swarup shakti, who fulfills all of the Lord's desires. He's the complete powerful, and she's the complete power. Together they make the complete absolute truth. Krishna has no real existence without Radha, his power, and she has no existence without Krishna, as there's no meaning to the sun without the sunlight, and there's no meaning to the sunlight without the sun. Could you imagine a sun without light? How could it be a sun? So this achintya swarup shakti, or all accommodating inconceivable potency of God, according to his desire, she manifests his original form, the original form of God, that is the original swarup, the original nature, the original form of Swayam Bhagavan, means the original supreme personality of Godhead, who's full with six opulences: all strength, all wealth, all beauty, all knowledge, all renunciation, and all fame. And all of those six opulences here in this world are just like perverted reflections of that absolute reality. So she manifests that form by his desire, and she manifests the forms of all of his unlimited incarnations and expansions, who come just like the innumerable, inexhaustible waves of a river. And then she manifests his abodes, his various unlimited planets, spiritual planets, where he performs unlimited pastimes. And then she manifests the prakriti, or the material nature, which produces unlimited material universes and planets, one tiny one which we see a little portion of. And she produces or manifests the unlimited jivas, or living entities, who emanate from the tatastha shakti, or the marginal energy of the Lord. And from that point, some jivas choose to go to Krishna's personal abode and enjoy with him forever, and some choose to come here to this material world. And due to forgetting him, as soon as they choose the glamour of this material world, Maya takes them over and creates various sufferings for them in different species of life, where they can attempt in so many ways to forget Krishna and be God themselves. So this inconceivable, internal, all-accommodating potency of the Lord, that's Srimati Radhika. And her expansions, or the expansions of her moods, the expansions of the ways in which she likes to serve Krishna, these manifest as her gopi friends. So one gopi is telling the other that if you have any attachment or attraction to your society, friendship, love, family duties, then don't go to the bank of the Jamuna. Why? What will I see there? Especially don't go when the moonlight is there. Why? What's there? You'll see Govinda there, playing on his flute, standing in a threefold bending form. Don't go and see him. Well, why shouldn't I go? Because if you go, then you'll forget all your society, friendship, and love. You won't be interested at all. So these were some of the early statements that Prabhupada made to encourage us in these paintings. When I was doing my first painting of Radha and Krishna, which if you happen to go to New York City, you can see still on the wall there at the first temple at 26 Second Avenue. Very, very crude, like a 7 or 8 year old did it. And yet Prabhupada was so encouraging that when I did my first couple of paintings, he called all the devotees around and said, "Now who could look at that and say that is not God?" And I was thinking, yeah, I don't know if I can ever do such a good painting again, but I'll sure try for him. You know, just like the mothers encourage their little baby children. So when I was in the middle of doing that first painting of Radha and Krishna, or when I was doing the first paintings in general, it was up in his quarters. Because first he had me paint downstairs in the original ISKCON temple room at 26 Second Avenue. And then one day, he came down when I was doing my first painting of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party. And again, it was very crude because sometimes, like somebody's head would be here and their body, and then you'd have somebody else's arms coming out in front of them, and then you have their legs coming out in another place. And it was just a copy. It wasn't that I was even making anything up. But still, it was very crude with lots of mistakes. But Prabhupada came down into the temple room, and just like with Gurudev, wherever Prabhupada goes, immediately all the devotees are like magnets, like metal to a magnet. So they were all standing around him, and Prabhupada came and looked at the painting, and he said, "Krishna has sent." You know, like I was some big thing that Krishna has sent. Because he knows how to encourage, like the father knows how to encourage little children. And then he said, he invited me to paint up in his quarters, where he always is. So I said, but, we called him Swamiji in those days. I said, "But Swamiji, the fumes are so bad, I'd hate to have them be in your quarters." So he said, "No, no problem." So I started painting in his quarters, and then he would come in very often and squat in that usual Indian way behind the painting and say this or that. So when I was painting that first picture of Radha and Krishna, he told one story because he probably noticed that I was like, you know, painting and spacing out. So again, to be encouraging, he said that an artist or any creative person has to think more than they do. Like a judge, he hears the both sides, the lawyers, he hears the witnesses, and then he thinks for a long time. And then to speak his judgment only takes a second, but to think about it takes a long time. So Prabhupada was being encouraging like that. And then he told the story of an artist who had to think for a long time before he did something. But this artist wasn't a painting artist, he was a writing artist. And his name is Srila Jayadev Goswami. And he was writing one very beautiful book of Lord Krishna's pastimes called Gita Govinda. And in there, there's one verse where Krishna is falling at the feet of Sri Radha and begging her for her mercy that I'm feeling great suffering. I'm burning in the fire of separation from you. So please forgive me and bless me. I've done something wrong. Please forgive me and bless me by placing your lotus feet on my head. That will show your udarya, or your magnanimity. So as he was writing this, as Srila Jayadeva Goswami was writing this, he was thinking, see, the words were coming to him. They weren't his words, because pure devotees don't write by something they calculatively think. Like, first I'll write this, and let's see, what should come after that? And this would be a very good developmental sentence that would bring the person to the next understanding of what's about to happen or what the philosophy is. He's not like that. This is real Harikatha. Harikatha means Hari himself, or Krishna himself, manifests in the heart of the painter or the writer or the servant, the speaker, and he himself speaks or writes or paints through that pure devotee. And that is real Harikatha. A non-self-realized soul can give a report on Harikatha, or information about, or news about Harikatha. But real Harikatha means the speaker or the writer is in trance, and just like our scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Srimad Bhagavatam is called Samadhi Bhasya. That means it's the trance commentary. That is Krishna manifested, so it's actually the swarup, or the form and character of Krishna himself. It's not a book by Srila Vyasadeva. So these thoughts were coming, and Srila Jayadeva Goswami was writing. But then he stopped, and his hand began to tremble, his pen began to tremble, his pen fell. Not exactly a pen like nowadays, more like a peacock feather with some crushed flowers as ink. And he thought, how could I write this? Because Radha, surely she's Krishna's greatest devotee, but devotees are subservient to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how can I write that he's asking her to put her feet on his head? So he told his wife Padmavati, I have to go and think about this. I'm going to take bath now in the river to meditate. So he left, and then sometime after that, Padmavati saw him returning and going over to his book where he was writing the Gita Govinda. And he wrote down something in the book, closed the book, put it back on the shelf, left. And then soon after that, he came back, and she said, your hair is wet now. So how did you get back so soon from the river? He said, what do you mean? I left a long time ago. I didn't just leave. She said, no, you left a long time ago, but you just recently came back, and you wrote something in your book. So first, he just couldn't get it at all. Then he said, let me see that book. So he looked in his book, and he saw that the verse that he couldn't bear to complete, smaragadalakandanam mamashirushimandanam dehi padapadavam udaram, that verse was completed in very beautiful golden letters. And then he thought, oh, Krishna himself has just taken my form and come and completed the verse so that I know that it's that he wants that verse. And then he said, oh, Padmavati, you're so fortunate. You got to see Krishna face to face. And they both wept and they both fainted. So this picture here, which is the same one that's on the altar, this is a very newly printed one. This is the picture of Krishna begging Radharani for her mercy. So I didn't do that painting during the time of Prabhupada. I was just doing that one very early picture of Radha and Krishna. And then I met Srila Gurudev in 1992, and he fructified what Srila Prabhupada was saying. And he, by his guidance, this picture was done. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to pass around a series. This is show and tell. And if you like, you can keep them. Otherwise, you can return them. These are, did you get one of these? These are a transcription of a series of conversations that I had with Srila Gurudev from the first moment he asked me to do this painting. And the first thing he said was, can you paint my heart? And I couldn't understand him. So he brought me into the next room and he said, and he showed me a painting that an Indian person had done of this. He said, I gave him 3,000 rupees and Radha and Krishna look old and I'm just not happy with it. Can you do another version? So since then, I was bringing pencil sketches and he was commenting on them. And then I was bringing the painting in various degrees of being finished. And so from beginning to end, this is a transcription of those conversations. Some of them are a page long, some of them are half a page long. So can somebody distribute them? So some of the conversations, all the details of the painting was done under Gurudev's guidance. And not only his guidance, but his will. Because I'll give you two incidences to show why. One was at the very end, when the picture was 99% finished. And I asked Gurudev, how is it that all the paintings that I did for the BBT, for Prabhupada's books, they only took me about a month or a month and a half to do. And this one took about 5 months to do. Why did it take so long? So Gurudev said, because the others you were doing by your will. And for this one, I had to push my will through your will. So that took the extra time. Another indication that it was Gurudev's will, and of course it was Prabhupada's will, is that the painting was three quarters finished. And I was painting it in Vrindavan, and somehow or other, nothing was working. And it didn't look like the real people, it just looked like paint. And Krishna's face, Radha's face just wasn't coming out. There's about 10 faces under there. And every time I would paint a face and come back, the eye was in a different place and the legs were all done over 12 times. And everything seemed to be moving and it was just totally not in my control. And it wasn't happening. This was about 4 months of working. So then Gurudev called me. And he said, if you have any room in the painting, then peeping like a shadow through the leaves of the vines in the background, you should put the mandris, or the maidservants of Radhika, who are looking in. He said it shouldn't be clear, and it shouldn't be, what word did he use that means congested? Could be heebie-jeebie. He was using that word a lot. Or heebie-jeebie, something like that. In other words, it shouldn't look congested. Depending on how much room you have, put as many mandris, the maidservants of Radharani, that you can comfortably fit. And they're watching and they're waiting because they know the exact moment when in Radha's and Krishna's conversation when it's time to come in and do their services. So I'm hesitant to continue on that note. That's why I'm just like a blank. But later on, when Radharani forgives him and she says, all right, but I'll excuse you if you serve me and paint my feet. Do that service. So Krishna, of course, there's nothing more in his whole existence that he wants to do more than that. Even though he's Swayam Bhagavan, innumerable incarnations like Nrisinga and Varaha and Vamandev and Vishnu, even the Lord Vishnu who breathes in and out innumerable universes, when he's exhaling, innumerable universes come out and grow and exist, and all the species come out, and people transmigrate through innumerable species of life. And we think a day is so long sometimes, especially if it's a bad day. Or we're waiting for somebody who's late. But the whole universal existence is just one exhalation of Lord Vishnu, who Gurudev said is a part of a part of a part of a part of a part. That's five times removed from Krishna. Krishna's part, incarnations, incarnations, incarnation, five times. So even though a small portion of him is breathing in and out universes, and as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, a mere fraction of himself is the Supersoul who's sitting in the hearts of all living beings and directing their wanderings and acting like a witness. If you do something bad, or if you do something good, you can't get your punishment in the courts, or you can't get your reward in the courts unless there's a witness. So that witness is the Lord and his four-armed feature sitting in the heart of all beings in all species of life. And if we get, when we get the results of his activity, of our activities, it's because he's awarding them and he was the witness of them. Like there was one sage, and he was in his hermitage, and some thieves came, and the police came, and the police arrested the thieves, and they also arrested him. Naturally, they figured they're all together, and they were all sentenced to death. So for him, and he was going to be thrown on these all upraised swords. But then he came to the king's attention, who he was, that he was actually a great sage, and naturally he was innocent. So he was pardoned. And then he prayed to Yamaraj, the god of death, and asked, why did this happen to me? I'm an innocent person. And I worship God. Why should this happen? So Yamaraj, the god of death, told him that when you were a child, you don't remember, but when you were a child, you were playing with some kind of an insect, and you stabbed him with a straw. So you couldn't now die because you are freed from your sins, but I had to do something. So the Lord is directing the wanderings of all living beings seated as if on a machine made of material nature, and he's also awarding the results of all of our activities, and he's the witness of all of our activities. So Lord Krishna is the source of all those innumerable incarnations. And the highest feature of that Swayam Bhagavan, the original form of God, is this Radhanath, the he who's Nath, or he who's Lord. Lourdes is Srimati Radhika. So, or Gopinath, same meaning. So, his greatest fulfillment of his desires is to serve the lotus feet of Srimati Radhika. So, she being the embodiment of the guru of gurus of gurus, doesn't consider, I'll do this to please him, but her natural makeup of Madanakya Mahabhav is spontaneously to give him the highest pleasure. And that's why he is Satchitananda, Sat, eternal, Chit, full of knowledge, and Ananda, full of bliss, Vigraha, full perfection of form, only because of her association and service. Otherwise, as Srila Gurudev said, without her, he's Nirvishesh Brahma, the impersonal Brahman, featureless, qualityless. Because what is the sun without the sunlight? It's not the sun. One time when I was first coming to know Gurudev, we were at Braj Mandala Parikrama, and he was saying that. So I said, well, what do you mean that he's Nirvishesh Brahma? without Radha. He has a form, his own form. So Gurudev said the rock has a form also, but it doesn't have any qualities. A rock, stone. So she says that, okay, paint my feet. So he paints her feet with, you've seen many in the Indian ladies' feet called mehendi. Mehendi? So his mehendi is his holy names. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Because we learn from our scriptures and our acharyas that Nam and Nami are one. Or God is none different from his name. If I chant apple, 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 and I'm really hungry, it doesn't bring the apple. Because the apple is not absolute. It's a relative material thing. But if you chant Krishna, 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 then Krishna is actually present, if the chanting is pure. So Krishna knows that my name and me are non-different. So if I write my name on Radha's feet, then I'll really be there, and I can always remain at her feet. So as soon as Krishna touched her lotus feet, his heart began to tremble, because he's touching the highest thing. The embodiment of prema is all the embodiment of pure love is at her feet. And so his heart began to tremble and his hand began to tremble. So when he writes his name, he can't write it properly. So Gurudev said, because I had to do that on the painting, you can imagine if God is writing, God himself is writing his name and he's trembling in the highest ecstasy, what kind of an art will it be? How artful it'll be. So that's what's there. And if you look closely, if anybody reads Hindi, you can see Krishna's name one after another. Mm. Now, you notice that the flute is there also. And this is because Krishna is telling Radharani that, look, you know, with his hands, look, I'm giving you the thing that's most cherished and most valuable to me, my flute. I'm putting the flute at your feet so you can see that I'm sincere. So that was also told by Gurudev. Everything was told by Gurudev. He also said to put, you see those like silver kind of trays there? He said, those are different unguents for decorating Srimati Radhika. Like sandalwood paste and kumkum, kasturi, what? Aguru, yeah. And it was Gurudev also who said about Krishna's translucent shirt, transparent. He said when a young man, a youth, wears a transparent, tight shirt, it looks very attractive. So he said to make that. And then he told me to put the Kaustubha money, the Kaustubha jewel on Krishna's necklace, which is more brilliant, more effulgent than many, many suns. And the Shamantaka jewel, which is a very, very special jewel on Radhika's neck. And he told me to put these different Bailey, Chameli, Jui, like jasmine flowers and other flowers on her braid. And you can see there's two birds speaking behind them. That's Sukh and Sari, the male parrot and the female parrot. And they're having a little argument. And he's saying how Krishna's greater. And she's saying how Radha's greater. And then they come to a compromise that together they're the perfect greatness. And Gurudev also told me to make the Kadamba trees, I'm sorry, the Tamal trees with the Kadamba flower creepers winding around the Tamal tree. And to put the betel nuts was also Gurudev on the other side for them to chew. And he said that this scene actually has millions and billions and unlimited pastimes that can go with it. One of the pastimes, I'll just tell one in particular, and if you read the book Gita Govinda, you can see some of the other pastimes that go with this. This pastime came from, Gurudev said it came from his heart. Then he said, no, actually it came from the heart, before that, before it came in his heart, it came from the heart of Srila Rupa Goswami. We are in the cyclic line from Srila Rupa Goswami. And before Srila Rupa Goswami, it was in the heart of Krishna, because there was a certain thinking that he had that made him do this. And before that, it was in the heart of Radhika, because she inspires him to have his various moods. Although he often thinks it's just coming from him. Like, Lord Chaitanya is called Gaura Hari. Gaura Hari Sachinandan Gaura Hari Kijai. So Gaura Hari is Lord Krishna, who's assumed the golden complexion of his devotee to teach us how to develop love for Krishna. He comes as a devotee to teach us how to develop love for himself. And the way Srila Prabhupada explained this in the beginning of the movement is that a teacher knows how to write very easily, beautifully, but she's teaching the little children how to write. So she goes up to the big blackboard and goes, A, B. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, who took the form of a devotee to teach us how to be devotees. But of course, he took the form of the greatest devotee, that is Srimati Radhika. Hari means one who steals or takes. And Gaur means the golden complexion of Srimati Radhika. So Gaur Hari means he who has stolen the golden complexion of Srimati Radhika. But Gurudev said this is an impossibility because she is his power. And he has six powers. All beauty, all strength, all wealth, all fame, all knowledge, and all renunciation. That's what makes him God. So he's the powerful and she's the power. So she's the embodiment of his six opulences. One of them being knowledge. And within knowledge, or within intelligence, is alertness. So she's too alert to have Krishna steal her mood and complexion. So therefore, he didn't really steal it, he begged it. And she said, all right, but under certain conditions, which is a whole other thing. So, even though he's the God of gods, he's begging in this way. And what was I up to in the painting?
The flower going around the tree. The
flowers going around the tree, but there was something after that.
What is the begging?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, he's not begging it there. He's just begging her to forgive him.
That's what it was.
Very good. So he's thinking that Radharani has been too submissive lately because there are different kinds of gopis. All the gopis are expansions of Radha, but she herself and her original feature is a left-wing gopi. She makes Krishna work to achieve her grace. She plays hard to get, she gets angry at him if he's late, which is what's happening here. She's saying, he's begging her to forgive him, and she's saying, you can just go back to where you came from. I'm not interested in having any relationship with you, it's finished. Just to increase his eagerness. And his eagerness and his happiness increases millions of times by this way that she acts. So this originally came from Krishna's heart, which originally came from Radha's heart. So he's thinking that she's been too submissive, so purposely he comes late for a rendezvous so that she would think that he was with another gopi, but he really wasn't. So she's thinking that, you know, it worked. She's thinking that he was with another gopi, but wait, I forgot to tell you why she was particularly thinking that. Because not only did he come late, he really wanted to make it look good. So he said, when he did come late, he said to her, "Oh, my dear Chandra Anani," that is her rival, her chief rival, who's nothing but an expansion of her when she wants to serve Krishna in a right-wing submissive mood, is her name is Chandravali, which means the beautiful moonlight creeper of devotion or of love. And then Krishna pretended that he realized in the middle of the word that he had made a mistake to think that she was Chandravali. You know how, did that ever happen to you long ago? that you call the wrong one the wrong one. So, where does everything come from? Where does this mistake come from? Janmad yasiyataha. Everything has its origin in the absolute truth. Only here, it's full of inebrieties, imperfection, and misery. And in the absolute realm, it's full of eternal life, bliss, and knowledge. Just like if you have a real tree that's standing by the riverside, and it has beautiful flowers and fruits and butterflies and birds, but it's standing by the riverside, so in the river, it happens to be a muddy river that day. So in the river, the same thing is there, but it's upside down. The branches are on the bottom, and the roots are on top, and everything is made of muddy water. The flowers are made of muddy water, the leaves are made of muddy water, the butterflies are made of muddy water. So if you go for one of those flowers in the wrong place, in the illusion, then you only get muddy water. And then if you go for a fruit, you get some more muddy water, because there's no substance in the muddy water. Similarly, there's no substance of reality in terms of people, places, and things, and relationships in this world. There's no substance here. And the emotions we have in our relationships, or the emotions we have towards things like I love my dog, or I love my house, these are all, or I hate my boss, all these emotions have nothing to do with us. They have no substance. They're just perverted reflections of all these emotions in the reality. So, Krishna pretended that he had made a mistake and called her the wrong name. So Chandranani also means something. Anani means many. So it means that you're as beautiful as many moons. So he pretended to be late with the Anani. And as soon as he did that, she went like this. Okay, you go back to Chandravali. I'm not having anything more to do with you. Don't even try. And she was saying, she was calling him Neil Rohit Rudra. Rudra is Lord Shiva. Neil means, you know? Oh. Don't you speak Hindi?
No.
You're not Indian?
I don't know. Neil.
You were born in America?
Neil means dark.
Dark and blue. And Rohit means, I think, reddish. So, oh, you look so beautiful. You look like Neil Rohit Rudra. Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is red, reddish blue. Because I see you have all these red and blue marks on you from being with Chandravali. But the reason that he had the red and blue marks is because as soon as he saw Radharani, he became so, he's already totally absorbed in her. And when he saw her, he became more absorbed. And so being absorbed in her eyes and her lips, it came on him. The colors came on him. So she was imagining, based on that he said, Chandra Anani. So all of her sakis, like Lalita and Vishaka, are telling her, no, he can never, especially in front of you, you can't even think of another gopi. He was just a little late, just a second late, so you can excuse him. So she said, all right, I excuse you, but then you have to paint my feet. So Gurudev said that Jayadev Goswami, who wrote this prayer in his book Gita Govinda, he can't see Krishna's name on her feet because he's more far away. But these maidservants who were peeping in, ready, waiting to do their services, they can see. So this is the gift that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give the fortunate jivas. This is what he came to. This is what Krishna came to give in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How long should this class go up to?
You can go, keep going.
But till how long?
9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
So that's pretty much of a description of this picture. And the original picture is in Vrindavan as an altar. And Gurudev wanted me to arrange for, you can see the kunj there, but he wanted me to arrange for a 3D one. Like, you know how sometimes they have like life-size dioramas in different museums? Mm-hmm. So this would not be a museum. This is actually an altar. He said, this painting is worth billions of dollars. So I want the place, the room that they're in, as the second floor altar in Vrindavan, to be that valuable looking. So some devotees got those artificial leaves and flowers. Somebody painted a background. Somebody got real life-size wooden peacocks. And somebody brought some rabbits. And somebody brought a deer, a couple of deers. So now when you go to Vrindavan, I hope you're coming, David, in November, October, November, for Kartik. Maybe for a few days. You can see this in its 3D form. So I guess that's pretty much the one description of the history of this picture. And then we have some never-before-seen originals. And if you like, at the end you can come over. The originals, a couple of the originals are still for sale because we want to raising funds for Gurudev's Navadvip project. So if there's like a super rich people, then we sell these originals. But there's only three, and one is already sold, and one is half sold. The person's thinking about it. So this one was bought by a devotee just a few weeks ago in Malaysia. If, on this occasion, Radharani didn't forgive him and he left, then she starts lamenting here that, oh, fie on my life. My beauty is useless. It's uselessly wasted. Because, I hope that Manjari will sing this, because when Gurudev started to talk about this, was in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, because he asked her to sing anything. And she sang this verse, and he was so affected by it that he started telling how Radharani is thinking. So would you mind?
This one?
Yeah. Bihari. The one that you told me was in the second chapter. Remember when I asked you when I was looking at Gurudev's lecture and I said, where is this verse from? All right, I'll speak for a few more minutes so that you can take. Or no, sing anyone that you like. It's all in the same mood. You want to wait a minute and I'll keep talking.
Sure. Yeah,
while you look.
I find it.
Okay. So Gurudev was so affected by the singing that he began speaking about the verse. And I'm trying to find it here. She said, Krishna came to me with so much pleading in his heart, so much love, such an appeal, and he was also weeping, but I sent him away. So now what's the use of my qualities? What's the use of my life? What's the use of my beauty? What's the use of my youth? I'm trying to find where those notes are of that particular one.
Let's see.
You did? Okay.
It's called Krishna Wrongly Understood. It's like the 13th song, maybe?
Okay.
So this one of Radha sitting alone. The chorus, it says, in the meanwhile, in the moon illuminated in the interior of Vrindavan, or the moon illuminated the interior of Vrindavan with its rays. It had the blemish caused by the obstruction of the movement of harlots. It is the sandal mark on the face of a beautiful lady, the eastern quarter. As the moon's orb rose up in the sky and Krishna was delaying in his coming, she expressed her grief in different ways and she lamented aloud, Sri Hari has not come to the groves at the assured time. My blemishless maiden form has been wasted. In whom shall I seek refuge? I have been deceived by the words of my companion.
Now, I just found the note so that you could also think of this. This is, as we mentioned, Gurudev said, this lacks hundreds of thousands of pastimes for each scene. So this one that Manjari is saying is that just before Krishna came, when he was late. And then, when she was singing, Gurudev said that another time when she's lamenting like this alone is when she's saying that sometimes Radharani has no reason to be angry, sometimes she has a created reason, sometimes she has a little reason, sometimes a big reason. So she said, oh, black person, just go. And then she turned her face from him so strongly that he left. And then she is lamenting, weeping and singing, oh, why did I do what I did? Now I'm remembering how he came with his sweet flute fallen at my feet. Why did I do this? Oh, fie on me. How lovingly he spoke to me. He speaks so sweetly that he takes the hearts of all. And then Lalita says, well, why don't you just forget him? And she says, I want to, but I can't. And then Lalita says, so all right, then I can't help you. If you won't obey me, then I can't help you. You'll have to go on weeping.
Oh.
Okay.
Yami he kamiha sharanam sakhi Yami he kamiha sharanam sakhi Jana vachana vanjita Yadanugamanaya nishi gahanamati silitam telamama hridaya miram samashara ki Yami he kamiha sharanam Yami he kamiha sharanam sakhi Shalavanjitam Mama Maranam Eva Vasa Gati Vati Ketanam Kimita Vihana Vihara Yami he kamiha sharanam sakhi Yami he kamiha sharanam sakhi Jana vachana vanchitam Aha kalaya
Govinda.
Srila Jayadeva Goswami says that these verses and these pastimes are the height of the subduing effects of Kali Yuga. This subdues all the effects of Kali Yuga, or this age of deceit, quarrel, and hypocrisy. But to be able to enter into the verses by which all of Kali Yuga is subdued, one begins with the process of meeting a bona fide spiritual master, taking shelter of him by initiation, chanting Hare Krishna, avoiding the 10 offenses, offering one's food, prasadam, with devotion, so many beginning steps to come to be able to enter. Generally, we don't talk about these high subject matters in classes. We did it because of the art, and particularly for Tatyana. And David also wanted to hear about the art. So this is the goal. And Gurudev says, without knowing the goal, I can't take the path or the process to get there. Just like the goal tonight was to get to this address. And so some people came by car, some people maybe came by bus. So some people came by plane, like ourselves. So without knowing this place, then we couldn't even have taken one step out of our houses to even begin the process. So the seriousness comes when one knows the goal, and then the process beginning from the beginning of spiritual life. Ado Shraddha, first a little faith, that what is this? Let me see what this is. Because one has been suffering in the illusion of illusory relationships and illusory emotions, and now having traversed many species of life and many times being a human and many times taking birth and dying and growing old and getting sick, it's like if you have an opponent and the person keeps punching you and you finally realize that it may be time to surrender. You can't win. So we've turned away from God or Krishna and the policeman, and then the whole world belongs to him, but we've turned away from him and we're using all of his property for ourselves. Like if you're a company driver of a trucking company, and there's a sign that says on the truck, for company use only, and you get bored with your work and you want to take the truck to a movie, then the trucking company, somebody spots you and tells the boss, and then they come and arrest you. So everything belongs to God or Krishna, but because we've stolen his property and are using it for ourselves illegally, including our minds, including our words, so that's why we have to suffer so much. So if somebody starts coming to his senses a little bit and realizing that this is an illusory struggle against the material nature, which I really don't have anything to do with, but because of my turning towards illusion, I'm doing it, then Krishna guides him to a bona fide guru, and then he gets initiation, which means to begin. Initiate means to begin the process of spiritual life. So one example that Srila Prabhupada gives of the illusory struggle against the material nature is that a bird, a big bird, happens to pass by a mirror. And then all of a sudden he sees that, oh, somebody's there watching me. So he walks up to the mirror and he thinks, who is this guy? So he pecks at the mirror. And naturally the mirror pecks back because you hit the mirror, so you get it too. So then he thought, what is this guy doing? So he pecks even harder.
Oh, no.
And then the pecking goes harder back. And then he just keeps pecking harder and harder until he dies. So this was all illusion.
Delusion.
Huh? What? Delusion.
Yeah, he was
deluded.
I've never heard that analogy before.
It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto. Another example the Prabhupada gives of illusion or delusion.
The image is the illusion, and when the bird thinks that's the fact, that's maya, then it's delusion.
You have something that's really delicious, like a pizza or something, but it's in the mirror. Again, it's another mirror analogy. And in the delusion that the real thing is in the mirror, you grab for it and you just hit the glass and you get frustrated, and then you grab again and hit even harder and get more frustrated, and then you just hit so hard that the glass breaks and you get all bloody. So the material world is like that because there's no reality here. It's just a reflection of the real world. So it's like if you're putting food in your pocket thinking that your clothes are really you. It's just the covering.
And it seems to have a lot of life. Like when you dance at kirtan, it looks like your dress or your shirt is jumping up and down and dancing. Even though if you take it off, then it's just a flat piece. It doesn't have any shape or life. But when it's on you, it appears to have life. So this body is just dust. Dust thou wert, dust thou beest. But it appears to have life due to covering the soul by the soul's contaminated consciousness. We create our bodies by our consciousness. So putting the food in a pocket, thinking that the shirt is really me, is another delusion. Another person just dies out of malnourishment. Hmm. Then another shirt and coat delusion is that Prabhupada gave, is that a man is drowning in the ocean, the lake, and there's a big crowd around the shore of the lake. And one man walks up to see what the big crowd is about, and he sees the man in the middle. So he's a good Samaritan. He says, "I'll save him." And then he pushes his way through the crowd, jumps into the lake, takes the man's hat and coat, brings it back to the shore. "I've saved him." And meanwhile, the man drowns. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the dress is described as a dress. Just as a person puts on new dresses, giving up the old and useless ones, so the soul takes on new bodies when the previous body gets too old. As the soul continually passes in this body from childhood to youth to old age, so at the time of death it takes on another body, and the self-realized soul is not bewildered by all these changes. So Bhagavad Gita is the ABC of spiritual life. It's the first book without which these elevated topics can't be understood and, what to speak of, entered into. Without Bhagavad Gita and the learning how to chant and follow the rules and regulations under the guidance of a bona fide guru, then it seems like Krishna is an ordinary boy and Radha is an ordinary girl. And I can't worship the pastime properly, or to speak of, relish it properly. So now I'll tell you about another picture that, if any of you have been to this house before, oh, is it up on that wall there?
Yeah.
It's right there. Can you all see it? It doesn't look like much is happening. But there's a hidden aspect to that picture.
Which picture?
It's a big vase here.
Very important picture. Before going on to the next picture, I'll tell you about this picture. The hidden part of this picture is that there's a spout coming out of that vessel. But the spout is in the back and you can't see it. And the story that goes behind it is that one of the incarnations of Krishna, as I mentioned, this is the highest feature of God, and it seems like nothing. It seems ordinary. But when we hear about his very powerful incarnations, and then we understand that this is the source, then we get some appreciation that this isn't ordinary. So one incarnation of Krishna is called Lord Vamandev, and he is Krishna's Vishnu feature, with four arms. But he took the form of a dwarf brahmana, because there's always two classes of people. One is the demons and one is the demigods. And the demigods in the heavens, they usurped the kingdom of the... Did I say demigods? The demons usurped the kingdom of the demigods. The demigods are devotees and they rule over the functions of the universe. So the demigods took over their kingdom. So in order to get the kingdom back for the demigods, the Lord took the form of a little child, like a 8-year-old Brahmin boy. And he came to the palace of the demoniac ruler, Bali Maharaj. I think I told you I was going to tell you this story. Yeah. So he had a very big effulgence, because the Lord does have a big effulgence. So Bali Maharaj said to him, he was so overwhelmed, and the kings generally give in charity to Brahmins. If the king isn't a devotee, then he gives in charity because so that the Brahmana will bless him with some material powers or opulence or some material favor. And if the king is a devotee, then he gives in charity to the Brahmins for his spiritual life. So Bali Maharaj was the king of the demons, and he was so overwhelmed by Vamandev's beauty that he said, "Oh, I'll give you anything. What can I give you?" He said, "I'm a Brahmin boy. If I take more than I actually need to maintain body and soul together, then I will lose my spiritual power. So I always remain satisfied." So Bali Maharaj said, "Look, I can give you many beautiful wives. I can give you palaces. I could give you a planet. I can give you elephants, palaces, anything." He said, "No, I'll be satisfied with just 3 steps of land, just enough to where I can sit down and do my bhajan, chanting Hare Krishna." So Bali Maharaj said, "Yes, I'll give you that." So generally when the king gives something in charity, consecrate the vow, there's a little ceremony where you say mantras and he makes the vow and they pour the sacred water from the vessel. So Sukracharya was a materialistic spiritual master of all the demon class. And all this time he had been telling Bali Maharaj, "Worship Vishnu, worship Vishnu, and you'll get all your desires fulfilled." And now Vishnu's coming, and Sukracharya thinks, "I know what's going to happen. He's going to give him the 3 steps of land. He's going to take such big steps that I'm not going to have any place to live anymore." So thinking of his own self, because that's the material mentality, that if I give to God, if I give to the spiritual master, then I'll be out. So Sukracharya told him, "Look, Bali, that's Vishnu. That's no Brahmin dwarf. Really, he's going to cheat you and he's going to take everything from you." So Bali Maharaj got a little excited and he thought, "Well, you know, if he's really Vishnu and you've told me to worship Vishnu and he's really God and God really can do anything, then even if I just give him 3 steps of land, he's going to take everything anyway, even if I don't give him anything. And if he's not Vishnu, then he can only take 3 steps, so there's no harm." So Sukracharya refused, as the spiritual master, to do the consecration. So Vamadeva said to him, "Well, if he doesn't want to help you, I'll help you." So he said, "Okay, let's take some water." So Sukracharya absolutely did not want this to happen. So even though he's a materialistic spiritual master, he has great mystic powers. So he made himself very tiny, like this. And he entered the vessel where the vessel meets the spout, just that place. So that Bali Maharaj tried to pour the water, but nothing would come out. So there's no vow, no steps, no nothing. So Vamandev took a little stick. And, "Oh, I see there seems to be some problem there." So he took a little piece of straw and he stuck it in the vessel. And instead of water coming out, blood came out, because Sukracharya got hit in the eye and he became blind in one eye. But actually he was already blind in one eye, because he had one eye facing the material world in the name of being a spiritual master. So Lord Vamandev, he was right, because he is Vishnu. With the first step, he covered the entire bottom half of the universe. The entire universe. That means many millions of planets. With the, I think we have a picture of that. Anita, do you know where, if you can find, there's one section in David's art book. where it's the section called, or maybe David could find it. It's a section called Incarnations. And you'll see Lord Vamadev covered the entire universe with his one step. And with the second step, he went through all the coverings of the universe. That is, once Prabhupada called me into his room when I was painting in the one room, and his room was in the next room. So he called me into his room, and he said, you see this pot, this brass pot on the floor? That was Prabhupada's water pot. And you see there's a reflection of the sun on the pot? We were inside the room, but the sun was coming through the window and reflecting on the pot. He said, the sun is bouncing off the wall, and then the wall, the reflection is bouncing onto this pot. But the sun is so far away, it's millions and millions of miles away. The scientists say it's 93 million miles away, maybe more than that, but it's far away. He said, this whole universe is, he said, so similarly, just like even though the sun is so far away, but we're getting its reflection in this room. Similarly, even though Krishna is so far away, the sun is getting its light from the Brahma Jyoti, that is the unlimited expanse of space, just like we have an outer space. So there's a spiritual outer space called the Brahma Jyoti, which is millions and millions of times more brilliant than the sun. And the Brahma Jyoti is getting its light from Krishna's body, from Krishna's effulgence. So, and in between the Brahma Jyoti and this universe, the universe is covered by some layers. Like, we only see the outer space, and we don't see very much of it either. We can't even see to the one next planet. Scientists, I know when I was a kid and went to school, the teachers told us there were 9 planets. But actually, there's millions of planets, but one sun in each universe. So Prabhupada was telling me this time with the picture. He said the whole universe is 4.5 billion miles in diameter, that goes from one circumference to the other. And then 10 times the diameter, there's a layer of earth. Then 10 times the layer of earth, there's a layer of water. 10 times that, there's a layer of fire. 10 times that, a layer of air. 10 times that, a layer of ether. 10 times that, a layer of mind. 10 times that, a layer of intelligence. 10 times that, a layer of false ego. 10 times that, a layer of contaminated consciousness. So then you have all these universes that I mentioned previously are coming out of the breathing of Mahavishnu. So the sun, which is so bright, it's getting reflected from the Brahma Jyoti, which is outside of all those layers, and still far, far, far away, and that's coming from Krishna's bodily effulgence, which is very soothing. It's not hot like the sunlight. So then Prabhupada said, when we go out into the bright, sunny day, we feel, oh, this is so nice, especially if you've been working like in a factory or something, you're inside the dank room, and you go out in the bright sun, oh, how fresh. We think that every day, isn't it, when you go out into the sunlight, even for a moment. Said, so just imagine how good everybody feels when they are with Krishna, playing with Krishna and associating with Krishna. So, back to Vamandev. He went through the whole universal covering, and then he told Bali Maharaj. So, see, Bali Maharaj was very famous for always keeping his vow and telling the truth. Even though he wasn't a devotee, and he was against the demigods, this was his really good quality. And that's why when he promised Vamandev the 3 steps of land, when Sukracharya told him not to give it, he said, I already promised, there's nothing I can do. So now Vamandev told him, so you just broke your promise, and now you've given me 3 steps of land. He actually was in control of the whole universe, Bali Maharaj, because he took it from the demigods. He said, now there's no place for my 3rd step. Now you've broken your vow. You have to be punished. So he said, wait a minute, I have an idea. there's something more valuable than all my possessions, and that is the possessor of the possessions. The possessor is more valuable than the possessions. So I still have my head. You can step on my head. That means I surrender and give my whole life to you. So Vamadeva stepped on his head, and Bali Maharaj became a pure devotee. Now, the reason that Vamadeva gave so much mercy to Bali Maharaj wasn't because he gave the universe. He gave it because his grandfather was Prahlad Maharaj. And anybody who's in the family of a devotee, even if those people are against devotional service, they also benefit along with that devotee. Sometimes devotees feel obligated to their family members who are against Krishna consciousness, but therefore Krishna helps them by saying, I'm going to take them along. Maybe they won't even be aware. In their next life, they'll have a better opportunity for devotional service. So don't look back. Don't think that you have to be with them and not be a devotee, because you won't help them and you won't help you. You'll all go to hell together. And you, in fact, you'll go to different hells. You won't even be together. So Krishna makes that arrangement to help the family members. So because Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, therefore all these wonderful things happened to him, that the Lord personally came to him and made him into a devotee. So Gurudev was saying, don't think that it's because Bali Maharaj gave the universe that he got the mercy. He said, then Gurudev said, what's a universe? Even if you give a universe, you won't get the mercy. The mercy comes if you've pleased the pure devotee, if you've connected with the pure devotee, and the pure devotee loves you, then he, because the Supreme Lord's mercy follows the devotee's mercy. And the devotee just tells him, give mercy to this person. And then Krishna is obliged to do so. In fact, with Srimati Radhika, the way we were introduced to her in the beginning was 1967, I think. And we were all sitting in Prabhupada's courtyard at 26 Second Avenue, in between the temple and his back room. There was an apartment behind the courtyard. And we were all sitting next to Prabhupada, and he started talking about Radharani, because he had just initiated one girl named Karuna Mai. So she asked, what does my name mean? And he said, that's the name of Radharani. She's the embodiment of mercy. He said, if I go to Radharani, even if I'm a rascal nonsense, but if I pray to Radharani, then she goes to Krishna and she says, oh Krishna, I could never love you as much as this devotee. Please accept them. And then Krishna's forced to accept them. And therefore we chant Hare Krishna. Hare is Radha. Hare means, it's the feminine of Hari. Hara is the name, and Hare is the vocative, meaning oh Hara. And Hara means one who steals the heart of Krishna. Even though Krishna is God and he controls the whole universe, he can create many universes, destroy them in 1 second, and recreate them in 1 second. But still, his mind is controlled by Radharani. So similarly, the pure devotee, all the pure devotees in our line from Srila Rupa Goswami are sent personally by Radharani. And when one gets the favor of such a pure devotee, he takes initiation by him and he follows his instructions, then he gets the mercy of Krishna. And not only is all his desires fulfilled, but more desires than he can possibly know he has is fulfilled in this world. Plus, he becomes an associate of Krishna himself. Just like a light bulb that's connected with the powerhouse. You turn it on and it illuminates. If there's some break in the switch, or whatever you call it, then you turn it on, but it doesn't illuminate. So I'm speaking so many things tonight that I've heard from my two spiritual masters, but it's just information. It's not going to illuminate you. It's informing you, though. Something's better than nothing. But when you hear it from Gurudev, he actually puts it in your heart and plants it as a seed, and then it grows into the reality. So the moral of this story with the vessel...
Well, then you're adding water to it, then. adding water? No.
He adds the water. He gives the water also. Which brings us to tonight is analogy night. So another analogy. Then I'll come back at the end to the mountain of the, the analogy of the water. The pure devotee is like an expert gardener, because an expert gardener can look at the seed of any plant and he can tell you what plant that is. I can tell it if it's an acorn. I know that's going to be a pine tree. But that's about it. And it's all seed. But an expert gardener can look at any seed and tell you what plant that's going to be, how it's going to look, and exactly how to nourish it to get it to be that. Like what kind of sunlight, what kind of water. Similarly, the pure devotee could not only look at those who are his disciples, but he could look at any living entity and tell, he can see the soul inside the body and mind and all the coverings of illusion. And he can see what service that soul has for Krishna in the spiritual world, exactly what the form of the soul is, and how to nourish the soul by the process of bhakti, by hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deity, following the rules and regulations of Brahminical life. And so he knows exactly the process to get you there, and he knows exactly what you're going to do. And then at the end, when you've been following, then he gives it to you. He blesses you, and by the mercy of the guru, you get your spiritual form. It's already there, but he, by his blessings, it comes out. So that was that analogy of the water. He waters it also. But now back to the final analogy, before we ask for questions, of Vamadeva. So, therefore, if anybody, just like the spiritual master was telling the disciple not to worship Vishnu, so if anybody tells their student or their spouse, their relative, their friend, not to take to devotional service, then not only is he already blind, at least in one eye, but he's going to be really blind in one eye in the future, either in this life or in the next life. So Gurudev said, so don't do that. If any of your wife, your husband, your any relative, friend, anyone you know is taking to bhakti yoga, devotional service, and taking shelter of a bona fide guru, you should say to them, I like what you're doing. I bless you. I will help you. So then they will also benefit. So I only talked about two paintings tonight, so we saved more for future nights. Are there any questions or comments? This is a real interesting one.
My question.
The stories, yes.
Will there be prints of these?
There will be. Right now, if it makes it to Houston, because, you know, we nervously carry it to airports and so many things, and as long as it makes it to Houston, they make what's called a G-clay. Perhaps you know about that. It's the highest quality print in the world, where it looks exactly like the painting with every single subtlety. And so we're going to Houston, because that's one of the few places in the world that do that, and to make scans, and we'll make one print of that, and the opportunity to make many prints of that quality. But then we'll make also inexpensive prints. At least that's the plan.
Is it possible?
And that one too.
Is it possible to get you to tell us what a painting like that would sell for?
Want me to tell them? Can I tell them how much this one sold for?
Yeah.
This one sold for $20,000.
Thank you.
That's cheap.
Yeah, it's very cheap. Really junky modern art stuff sells for $50,000 or $100,000.
Yeah.
This one might be more, depending. This one might be a little more. And this one would be about the same, unless somebody wanted to give more, because all the money goes to Gurudev's Navadi. This is the original of the prints. Huh? No.
This is...
It was a very good print, even though it was really inexpensive, because it's India printing. It's very good, close to the original. But of course, nothing's ever like an original.
The original is where?
Here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's close to it.
It's close to it means it's good. You'll see the prints. They're over there. They're close to each other on the table and the chair.
And the funds are going for the Novadvipa project?
Yeah. Any other? Yeah.
You spoke that even at the hospital, praise to Radharani. Can you define that?
Well, that was just Prabhupada's word. Even if I'm a nonsense rascal, even if I have so many disqualifications, means I'm having trouble remembering, chanting properly. If I beg Radharani, then she, through her representatives and powers, makes me qualified. That's why we say Hare Krishna first. That's why we sing so many songs. Yeah. That's why we take shelter of her representative.
The difference between this painting and this painting, you made some changes on her eyes. Can you tell me about that?
Gurudev told me, you always paint people blind. And it's a sidelong glance. And even by the sidelong glance, Krishna faints. Gurudev said, what to speak of if she would look at him straight on. But I made it too sidelong, which is an impossibility. It would hurt if you really tried to do that. So Gurudev told me to correct the painting and make it bigger. There's more of the black. Well, what happened was, that's a whole other thing. I painted her with more curls and some different things on her hair. And then Vrinda, Brajanath Prabhu's Vrinda, she gave us a negative that she had to make a big print. And we brought it to the printers very innocently, and he put it in his computer, and it was totally low res. So it couldn't have made more than a 3-inch picture. So it so happened that ISKCON had done a big, big poster of it. So we brought the big poster that ISKCON did, very, very well done, and we brought it to the photographer who made a high digital photograph. We brought it back to the printer. They put it in their computer, high resolution, and then within the computer we changed the eye and made it a bigger eye. And then that was printed.
But this isn't even the final, final one.
No.
Yeah. The final one's like the...
Well, I like this one better myself. And plus we changed her cheek. But everybody's different.
I like the final one.
Yeah. And we also changed her cheek, if you notice. We changed it in the computer. So that she looks younger.
These are one of a kind. They only exist.
It's one of a kind, yeah.
2001's
of a kind.
There's a question back there.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
I was wondering, in the transcript it said that he asked you to put Krishna's name in Hindi or Bengali. And is that the language that they speak?
Yes,
or do they speak Sanskrit?
No, Sanskrit and Hindi looks the same. Most of the letters, if you look at a Sanskrit verse in the Bhagavatam, and you look at a Hindi in the Hindi songbook or something.
But they speak all those languages. Is that what you're asking? In the
I'm
spiritual
asking,
world?
What do they speak?
It's oh, what do they speak?
The spiritual world.
Oh. I don't know. Brij Bhasha?
or is it to make it accessible to modern people? Or like why?
No, this the written language is the same of Hindi and Sanskrit. I don't know what it would look like in the spiritual world if we faint, Gurudev said. Like these pictures of the Manjaris that I did? Although they were done under Gurudev's guidance, Gurudev said, they don't look exactly like the people. If we saw the people in person, we would immediately faint. And although he praised the painting so much, from a relative point of view, he said, but when Gurudev, looks at these paintings, I see so many defects, but when I see the same thing in my heart, the real people moving, he said, I see no defect. Another painting pastime. Any last question?
How many times have you given this lecture about the painting?
Well, I never gave this whole lecture. I gave about 6 or 10 lectures about the painting. But not with all the other things.
But I think it's ever new.
It's ever new.
And if we're lucky, I might be getting a CD of this class in Malaysia. that she gave last month.
Oh, yeah, Malaysia.
Hopefully it'll come.
Was about the different paintings, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a question? In the transcript, it also said that he said, with Bhagavad, not like Americans.
Yeah, meaning the face shouldn't look like an American, because I'm American, and people generally paint according to their modes of nature. So he said, don't. He was pointing to some beautiful young girls from the West in the room. He said, don't make it like that. Make it with them looking transcendental brush. Like this one here, when Gurudev saw this picture, he said, Radharani looks like a pukka. Pukka means first class. Like a pukka brijbasi.
So what are the features that identify them?
Can't say. It's only seen.
Artists.
Okay, can't say. I mean, you can't say it in words. Okay. Can't say the nose is shaped like a something. Or
Deity, what was the quote that Prabhupada said when you're painting, it's like you're decorating the deity or something?
Well, I asked him once in Los Angeles in 1975 when he was taking a tour of all the departments. I asked Prabhupada, which of the nine processes of devotional service is painting? There's hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, carrying out the order, praying, becoming a friend, surrendering everything. Yeah, those are nine. So I said, which of them is this? So he said, when you're painting, it's archana, or worshipping the deity, decorating the deity. And then when it gets published in the book, then it's kirtan. It's glorifying in mass. I can agree with you because I didn't do it.
No, that's
just
what you just said.
Oh, that statement, yeah.
That and the
statement. Yeah. Yeah.